Hi, this is Erica Vixen Gavin coming to you on TV Confidential.
Russ Myers Vixen, the story of a girl who loves the joy of being alive and gives herself innocently to the merry chase of life. But like any other game, life has its rules, and if we trespass beyond them, the game can become deadly. There is no stronger bond than the friendship between two men. Judd and Niles shared such a bond, a brotherly tie blind to color. And yet, in a moment of violent passion, one led the other to the edge of destruction.
Ed Robertson, welcoming you back to TV Confidential, radio talk show about television. You might recall that a few weeks ago we had a chance to talk to Erica Gavin. Erica Gavin, one of the stars of Vixen, the satiric sexploitation film from 1968, and none other than Roger Ebert once described as the quintessential Russ Meyer film. One thing we learned while researching Vixen is that it also marked the motion picture debut of our next guest, Mr. Harrison Page. And though most of you know Harrison best for his many appearances on television, including his co-starring roles in CPO Sharkey and Sledgehammer, and his Emmy-nominated appearance in the original Quantum Leap, fans of the martial arts genre know Harrison Page best for his role opposite Jean-Claude Van Damme in Lionheart. Harrison has a couple other movies in the works, one of which is scheduled for release. Operative Word is scheduled for release on Friday, March 21st, while the other was produced and directed by our mutual friend Michael Schlesinger. We'll tell you about those, both these releases and more in just a second. Harrison Page, welcome to TV Confidential.
Well, you, hey, man, here I am.
Okay. Excellent. I understand that you were working at Cedars-Sinai Hospital at the time you auditioned for Vixen, and that Russ more or less hired you on the spot. Is that how it happened?
That happened. Oh, my goodness. How the hell did you... You went back to when I was like this little skinny guy. I look like a skinny Sidney Poitier or something. I mean, that's incredible, man. Well, you know what? I'm glad you got all that stuff down. That's cool.
Well, I try to do my homework. I try to work in as many details as I can to hopefully evoke memories.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. Now, I see the sign of hospital. I was an orderly. I was an orderly pushing around wheelchairs and stuff, and I had to make a living. At the same time, I was in college at LACC in the theater department, and I had learned from that place that I actually had some talent. I mean, I had some good professors who knew what they were talking about. So I did that job, and, I just did it. And one day, I was reading the newspaper just before I went to work in my white uniform. God, I love that period of time. Anyway, a guy called me up. I didn't know it. And he said, hey, man, listen, I gotta do this scene for this to try to get an agent. I'm wondering if you'd help me out with it. Boy, and I said, no, man, actually, I'm in school all day long. I don't have time. And I was married at that time to a young lady. We are no longer married, of course. And she said, why don't you just do it? What the hell? But, what can you lose? And I said, okay. I called him back, and I said, look, yeah, I'll go do the audition with you, man. No problem. So I went, did the audition with him. The audition turned out great for me. It didn't for him and the agent. Wanted me to sign with them. I was a big agent at that time called CMA. And these guys called me up and said, come see us. And I said, ooh, my, really? So I got on a bus because I didn't have a car. And went to Beverly Hills, met with these guys, and they signed me up. Unfortunately, the guy who asked me to do the thing didn't get signed up, and I'm sorry about that. But I called him and told him, and he was excited. Anyway, to make a long story longer, about 2 days later, I was reading the newspaper, and again, I was reading the newspaper, and I saw this thing in the newspaper about this movie. I didn't know what kind of movie it was. I just said, I got to get going. I got to get going. So I went out, and this guy lived in Beverly Hills, and that was Russ Meyer. And I did an audition with him at his home, and he liked it because he said to me, oh, I like what you're doing. You look so natural. And I said, well, thank you very much. You know, I didn't know any better. I was always kind of natural. So I went home, and man, he called me back and said, yep, you're doing a film. So we went to Northern California, and we filmed that thing. It was, I think it was representing Canada. We were supposed to be in Canada,
yes.
Something like that.
Yes, yes.
That's where we started. It was the first time in my whole life I had ever been in front of a camera. I mean, I had a great time with them. Well, you mentioned Erica Gavin.
Yes.
Erica, wow. You know, she was lovely. She was a very lovely lady. Very hard-nosed, very, no messing around. She did the job.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was the first time she'd ever been in front of a camera, too.
Yes.
But we had a great deal of fun, and I was supposed to get angry at her for, calling me these racial names.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow I was able to make that work. Beginning of that film, it starts with me coming in on a motorcycle.
Yes.
I don't know if you remember this.
I had a chance to watch the movie in its entirety a couple of weeks ago. So
you saw it.
I did.
Okay. So I'm supposed to. I come in on this motorcycle, and I'm the first guy in. The other man, he was supposed to come in first. So Russ says, "No, I wanted him. I want Harrison to come in." First, because you have to watch, make sure he doesn't fall off that thing. Because I've never ridden a motorcycle in my life either. So it looks as if, I'm the star of the show coming in on this motorcycle. It's the craziest thing. And every time I saw it, I said, my God, I'm covering this guy. He's supposed to be just protecting me. But, it was a terrific time that I had. I'd never been in front of a camera, like I said. And Gus was just as insane as usual about the women.
Mm-hmm.
Gus was about taking photographs of women, and he believed in doing these films that were majorly about breasts.
Yes.
I saw that, and mm-hmm. I saw breasts. And I said, well, that's all right. I'm an actor. Let me act this thing. So then I have this scene with her where I'm supposed to rape her on the screen or something, and both of us had trouble with that.
Yeah.
Neither one of us wanted to do that, but it was in the film. Mm-hmm. I had to make it look good. She was sweet as she could possibly be. And here's something that is, I'm telling you this is, no one knows this but me and her. I couldn't do enough to her to make her cry.
Mm-hmm.
So she said, why don't you pinch me? And I said, okay, I'll pinch you if you want. And I pinched her. And we did another take, and she said, And I said, hey, you know what, sweetheart? I said, man, I'm looking at you, and you're beautiful, and I love watching you, and you're wonderful. And, damn, I'm just, you're just incredible. And she started crying. And we did the same. And Russ said, that's it, let's go. That was it. And I don't know if even Erica remembers that, but I said good, nice things to her. That made her cry.
Well, I'm not an actor. I just talked to Harrison Page on the radio. But one thing I've learned from talking to actors, and particularly actors such as yourself, who are alumni of the Actors Studio, is, mm-hmm. I think this is one of the things that is taught at the Actors Studio, is a technique called affective memories, which is drawing on as close to a memory as possible in order for you to portray the emotion in the moment, in the scene that you're doing it at the moment you're playing with. And so, okay, so in describing the backstory of that scene where Niles is assaulting, is supposed to assault Vixen in one of the big scenes in the movie, okay, you may not have triggered an effective memory from Erica, but you triggered an effective reaction from her because in telling her you are beautiful, you made her cry, and that worked for Russ in the moment in that movie. So that was, that's a cool story.
But yeah, it's absolutely true, man. My work as an actor all through these many years has been based upon that. These guys, you got some of the best actors in the world, Steiger, Ellen Burstyn,
Meryl Streep.
You got all those people who understood that teaching.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I was right there with them, man, and I got it too. I mean, I had to be kicked around a lot by Lee Strasberg, but he knew what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I wasn't truthful, he was like, stop. So all of that work at the Actors Studio was very, very good for me, man. I got a lot out of it. And that's, you're right. It happened right there at that moment. Whatever it is that is going on with you at that moment, that's what you put on the screen without even thinking about it. And it has to be impulsive.
Mm-hmm.
You have to think about it, like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right.
Harrison Page is on the line with us. Harrison Page, Joshua from Lionheart, Captain Trunk on Sledgehammer, CPO Robinson on CPO Sharky, and the actor who made his motion picture debut as Niles, opposite Erica Gavin as Vixen and Russ Myers Vixen. Russ Myers Vixen, available now on Blu-ray through Severin Films, severinfilms.com, as well as amazon.com, wherever Blu-rays are sold, while both Russ Myers Up and Russ Myers Motorcycle are available for pre-order right now at severinfilms.com. You can follow Harrison Page on his fan page on Facebook or check out harrisonpage.com. Okay, we're talking about effective memories, which is one of the things you learned when you were at the Actor's Studio. And when you're describing, what you learned just a few minutes ago, I was thinking that even in a situation like when you were on Sledgehammer, which by mm-hmm. design was over the top,
mm-hmm.
you still, as an actor, you got to find some way to bring some sort of reality to the character you're playing, even though the series was over the top. You still have to find some way to ground your performance. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly right. Yeah. Because I believe I got that part because I found something that was truthful in that, and that it wasn't so much about my anger with him as much as it was about how his behavior exasperated me.
Yeah.
To a point where, I went through all this personal stuff whenever I had to deal with it. It was never really like, I got to bring up anger. That wasn't really what it was all about. It was about, okay, this man is trying to do his job, and he's got this fool coming in and messing with him all the time, and he's not supposed to do that stuff. Nor did my character even want to be in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
But the governor said, you got to put him in your precincts. That's, and I kept going, oh, God, no, not him. So that all that stuff came about because I decided that it was more of it just killed me inwardly, and always that I can't hit him, so I gotta let it sink into me and do what it does, and that's what you saw on the screen. And even in the yelling. Yelling, you're right, the yelling was way over the top. But even in the yelling was about my reaction to him rather than my anger at him.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Because, you're a captain in a police department. You're not at the bottom of the chain, but you're not at the top of the chain either. You got people you got to answer to. And the people you got to answer to says, okay, Hammer may have destroyed the skyscraper downtown, but he gets his man, and so you deal with him.
Right, right, exactly. I mean, what else could I do in that situation?
Exactly.
There was no, I'm against the wall in that thing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you see it. You see it in this. You see it in this guy when you see it. And you watch that show. You see it. You see it. What do I do in this situation? And all of that, again, I bring it up because you talked about effective memory.
Mm-hmm.
And it's there in that show every single episode.
Exactly.
Is I went for my to the point of almost tears away rather than trying to play this comedic thing.
Yeah.
But that worked better than you know what I'm talking about.
Exactly.
I literally do, man. Jesus Christ, you're right. You did your homework.
Well, what you did and what David Raich, is it Raich?
Rashi.
Oh, Rashi. Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah, I call him Rashi sometimes, and he says, that's not my name. And our relationship off the screen was almost the same as it was on. So it worked well.
Well, yeah, you bring whatever you have experientially to the moment in whatever you do. But what you and Rashi did, I mean, it's not unlike what the actors in, like, the Airplane movies did.
Right.
I mean, if you try to make it funny, you take away from the humor. The fact that you play it more or less straight.
Right.
That's where the humor comes out.
How did you do it? How did you get this? Man, you know what you're talking about. Yeah, that's exactly right. It's the same as anything you do on the screen that's emotional. You want to not go out there being hysterical because nobody really cares.
Mm-hmm.
You've pretty much, made the audience, say, I don't want to watch this anymore. But what you want to do is not try to be funny, but to try to be civil or to try to be not funny, or to try to be, try to keep things in a way that you understand them, and that relates also to what if you've seen some of my stuff, so you know that I have a tendency to be emotional.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't play. I gotta cry here. I always play. I don't want to cry.
Yeah.
I always play. I don't. I gotta laugh here. When I play, I don't want to laugh. I have to play as also if I need to be angry here. I don't want to play anger. I want to play. I don't want to be angry.
Yeah.
Which is what happened in Sledgehammer. I don't want to be angry. So rather than be angry, I was exasperated.
Yeah, and that's I'm thinking aloud here again, Harrison. But that's a very real emotion because in real life situations, if we're dealing with a colleague who is frustrating or is uncoachable. We don't go around trying to be angry. We try to keep we try to keep our emotions in control so we can make the best of a situation. And so when you say I'm trying to play as a man who's not trying to be angry, that gives real insight into how you're approaching playing that particular character, and it's real.
Yeah, it is. Yes, absolutely. You got it, man.
Okay.
You should be on this side.
When I don't do my show, I write for a living. I deal with enough rejection in that line of work, So I hear you. On the line with us is Harrison Page. Harrison Page, the actor known around the world as Joshua in Lionheart, Captain Trunk on Sledgehammer, CPO Robinson on CPO Sharky, and Niles and Russ Myers Vixen. Harrison will be back next week for part two of our conversation. We'll talk some more about working with Russ Meyer both on Vixen and Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. Plus, Harrison will tell us about how his appearance in Vixen resulted in Michael Landon casting Harrison in an episode of Bonanza, which turned out to be Harrison's first major TV credit. Part two of our conversation with Harrison Page next week on TV Confidential. In the meantime, Russ Meyer's Vixen, now available on Blu-ray through 7films, 7films.com, as well as Amazon.com, while Russ Meyer's Up! Motorcycle, both available now for pre-order, 7films.com. You can follow Harrison Page on Facebook as well as HarrisonPage.com. We'll play more of a conversation with James McEachin from February 2013 when we get back on TV Confidential.
Buying or selling a home can be one of the most stressful things we'll ever do in life, but it doesn't have to be. And no one knows better than our friends at Front Porch Realty. Their community of realtors serving the Northern Bay Area of California that cares about their clients as individuals first and foremost. Whether you're a first-time buyer or looking to lease or sell your property in the Bay Area, Front Porch Realty will help you through this important transition by providing you with the right information for your situation while lessening the pain. They also work with a network of realtors throughout California who provide the same high caliber of customer service. Call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 for a realtor referral near you. You can also visit their website, frontporchrealtygroup.com, for more information on the services they provide, including upcoming workshops and seminars. For more information, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com. Front Porch Realty Group. They'll find the solution that works best for you.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it.
800-365-4216. 800-365-4216. 800-365-4216. That's 800-365-4216.
One more item. If you're starting a company, particularly one that is in an emerging market, you know that averting any sort of legal dispute is crucial to your business plan. Our friends at Tectonic Law offer an array of services that can help you avoid and preempt future litigation while also developing and protecting your intellectual property and intangible assets. Tectonic Law serves the needs of a host of emerging industries throughout California and beyond, including industrial designers, beverage makers, artists, farmers, retail stores, health practitioners, wellness experts, cosmetics manufacturers, nonprofit organizations, innovators in sustainable practices, and libraries. Go to tectoniclaw.com to learn more about how Tectonic Law can help your business thrive. Tectoniclaw.com, rock solid representation for groundbreaking industries.
Do you owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes? Are you being audited or investigated? Has the IRS sent you a letter demanding payment? You may not owe what they claim. Make this free call to the Tax Doctor now. Let them negotiate with the IRS on your behalf.
800-239-0201. 800-239-0201. That's 800-239-0201.
Hi, this is Bernie Keith speaking, and you're listening to TV Confidential with Ed Robertson.
I remember the camps, the camaraderie. I remember boarding a ship and going off to war. I had that added sense of pride and commitment, because for the first time in my country's history, it no longer acted with hypocrisy and blistering shame. It no longer segregated its forces to say to the world, the one with the favorite skin will go and preserve democracy.
Ed Robertson, along with our guest, actor and author James McKeachin. James is the author of six novels, including Farewell to the Mockingbirds, The Heroin Factor, and Tell Me a Tale, a novel of the Old South. Tell Me a Tale offers a uniquely different story of emancipation that is perfect for students who are studying Southern history, while also offering a better understanding of the white man's view of the times. February, of course, is Black History Month. Tell Me a Tale is available both as an audiobook and as an ebook through Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, JamesMcKeachin.com, and wherever books are sold online. This conversation with James originally aired in February 2013. James McKeachin passed away January 11, 2025, at the age of 94. James, February is Black History Month. It is also the month with the President's Day holiday, which speaks to two of your other passions, patriotism in general, and particularly the rights of U.S. veterans. We mentioned in our open that you are a U.S. Army veteran. You actually served two stints with the Army, one in Japan, the other in Korea. And if I understand correctly, when you re-enlisted, which was at the time of the Korean War, it was very important to you that you serve on the front lines. Why was that important to you?
Well, the reason why is I had served with the, I took my basic with the 9th Infantry Regiment in an all-black outfit, which we can talk about. And then when I went to Japan, I was with the 24th Infantry, and my training had all been with infantry, and so you get to feel that that you're qualified for to fight, not really knowing what war is, because I don't care how many shells they fire over you at infantry, it's not the same as when shells are being fired at you. And there's a distinct difference, which you quickly learn the first time somebody shoots at you.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt that when I was in Fort Dix and I heard about this war and they froze all the discharges the day after I got out of the Army, I said, no way. No, you can't have this war going on without me participating. And so I re-enlisted after 30 days. And then the Army wanted me to go to the engineers or to be a clerk or something. I said, no. I got to be in the infantry. So I went overseas as the infantry and as a part and joined up with the 2nd Infantry Division, and I was a happy camper until they started shooting at me. you know, it's not a game.
No, it's not.
these people are serious.
Yes.
And I thought really stick to that. I mean, there's such a shock at someone. But someone actually tried to kill you. I mean, it's a sobering reawakening that people can be that rude and hostile or whatever. But then, and then when you fire and you hit someone, that image never goes out of your mind. In fact, I think I live with that one just about every day of that silhouetted figure go down. So it was an interesting, eye-opening experience.
Yeah, you just.
In fact, that very first time after the firefight, I got caught in some barbed wire. And the guy became so angry because of the fact he was trying to shoot you while you were coiling this barbed wire.
You just touched on one of my next questions, which is when you go through an experience like that, when you're in the midst of the action and you don't know if you're going to get out. I mean, is that something that stays with you your entire life? And you just answered that, but. I understand you still have bullet fragments in your back, correct?
Yeah, but that came from a firefight later on, a couple of months later, that August when I got hit. Yeah.
When you returned stateside, did you have flashbacks or did you have what we would call post-traumatic stress, or how were you able to integrate back into a civilian life?
It's late as yesterday.
Yeah.
It doesn't go away.
Yeah.
I can understand these young soldiers coming home and they're suffering with PTSD. In the old days, it used to be because of battle fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something else in our society that causes these guys, I think, to be more susceptible to that sort of ailment.
Mm-hmm.
See. But to get back to what you were asking,
mm-hmm.
When I first came back from the States, I mean, you know, you still have remnants of scars, I mean, traces of scars on your body,
mm-hmm.
and inside you got a little metal or two or something like that, the head of a bullet, as I still have, because it was never removed,
mm-hmm.
even though I had x-rays and all of that stuff there, but they felt that it was lodged between my ribs, and now it has something like some cartridge over it, and it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me, and I don't bother it. But that one night where you get hit, and I certainly was not to recount the story now, but it was a horrifying experience. But I, you know, you don't ache, you don't pain as much as you think that you should do, because the body becomes numb, and I think to a large extent, so does the mind. One of the things that you shouldn't do when you have a stomach wound is drink a water. And I woke up in the stream, and the first thing that happened to me is I got that morning, I got thirsty, and early that morning, around 4 or 5 o'clock, I would imagine it was that time. Is that I drank the water, and as a result, that was a huge mistake because 6 or 7 months later, I ended up catching TB, tuberculosis.
Mm-hmm.
Doctors probably from that water that had this phosphorus. And so I just went through a horrible time there. But my time in service, even though it sounds hard and everything like that, wasn't nearly. It's a fingernail scratch compared to what some of these guys went through, what some of those old-timers went through. I mean, my God, like in World War II, I don't think I could have survived in World War II. The constant shelling,
mm-hmm.
the dead bodies falling. Oh, my God, I can't even go there at this period. But it was just war is the most hard thing that a man has ever devised,
mm-hmm.
you know, or ever gotten involved with. There's so many ways that you hurt, and but the mind really. I don't think I know of a veteran who was on the front lines. I mean, you know, not all veterans are have been in combat. All of them, you know, because what I would say, less than half
mm-hmm.
of the people who are strutting around with ribbons who ever saw action to begin with, because it takes so many people to support the guy on the front line. You know, so but the guys that actually in combat, or the guys that say in World War II that fought in Corregidor or Bataan and places like that, my God Almighty, how many of those guys can stand it? I just don't know. Thinking about it caused me to start shivering. But yet and still, I am addicted to the military.
Yeah, which is interesting because I'm working with someone right now whose father was a World War II. He was a bomber pilot, and he still has residual effects of PTSD, and he cannot watch the military channel. He cannot watch anything related to the war. So it affects people. It affects people differently.
Yes, it does, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think probably I'm a glutton for punishment. I mean, I can almost cite you some of Goebbels' lines as well as Mrs. Hitler's lines and things like that. It was just amazing.
Well,
the Japanese don't. Now, one would think that I would be fascinated with the Japanese army, but not, because it wasn't. It didn't look militaristic enough. They were terrible people to fight, but not. They didn't have that wartime attitude like the people from the Third Reich.
Well, I know you're a glutton for punishment, James, because you're sitting here talking to me right now.
No, you're forcing me to go into some memories I don't like to think about. I haven't thought about recently about the barbed wire, for instance. I forgot about that. And then lately, when giving some of the speeches and doing a performance, it comes back. And
sure.
I don't know if that was the smartest thing I could have ever done in my life, was to write that play above the call. And then, too, what I've now gotten involved with my good friend Gary Sinise, is trying to deal with the issue of suicides that's occurring in our military, which we are losing almost a man a day now to, or a person a day to, a suicide in the military.
Yeah, but it speaks to what we were talking about earlier in our conversation, James. It is one of the issues that you are passionate about, and it's important that you channel your passion, and it comes across in the work, and it's authentic, and I know that you continue to touch the lives of many, many, many veterans across the country who, some of who are unfortunately forgotten because of the way our society treats them sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you're right. They do. And it's so wrong. It is so, so wrong. I even volunteered, believe it or not, to do a piece. Talk about veterans at the inauguration when I couldn't get the first base on that, and I think that was wrong. That piece ends up, as I say now, which is almost my mantra, is no veterans, no democracy, and no democracy, no America.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to do that piece, and I hope Hazel reminds me to call you, at the opening of the Dodgers, or maybe not the opening day, but somewhere at the opening of the Dodgers baseball game, and I'm going to do this much more than I've done before. I will also be doing it at the Gettysburg, because they're having the Medal of Honor ceremony to thank those incredibly heroic guys at Gettysburg this summer. I lost the date. It was the July the 20th, I think it was the 22nd, somewhere around there. But they're having a huge thing for veterans. I will be doing that piece. It's called voices. I've done it. Well, I've done it for Congress. I've done it for the launching of the USS Green Bay. I've done it for the commissioning of the USS Michael Murphy, and in various venues. I mean, I was even over in Kuwait, but in Kuwait I did the whole play. You know, and talking to those troops there, you know, those young boys, was really kind of fascinating. You know,
and
it was just a couple of months ago. Yeah.
And folks, we will. If you want a list of James's upcoming appearances, again, you go to JamesMcEachin.com, and it will list.
James McEachin will do it. That'll take him to it. We just simply don't do enough for guys who sacrifice much for this country. And not only that, they were willing to put it on the line, but they would do it all over again.
Absolutely.
The same with the guys in Kuwait that I talked to. You know, it's not the hardships of Vietnam or Korea or World War II, obviously. But they would do it all over again. Because I try to ask guys, well, what's missing if you had it to do all over again? And you know what? The thing that really gets you, I mentioned Sinise, who was probably as good a human being as you can find on the planet,
mm-hmm.
as far as being patriotic. He and I would go to Walter Reed and Bethesda and that sort of thing. And you can go into these rooms and you see these guys all bandaged up, most of them with the IED wounds. And, you know, some of them are just really, really, really in really bad shape. And you say to a guy, listen, I know this is bad, but I can say it to the guys because I have a Purple Heart as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to hear from you because you've been injured and you know how it feels. But I would say to a guy, listen, if you had it to do all over again, what would you do? And the guy said, I want to go back with my boys. Now, that doesn't put a tear in your eye. That
yeah.
will.
And another thing that will put a tear in your eye, folks, if you haven't seen it, go to YouTube, type in Reveille. Type in the word Reveille. You will come up with, I believe it's an 8-minute film that James shot about 10 years ago. It's just you and David Huddleston. And it's basically about two Army veterans. No words are spoken, and yet it's all.
Army and Navy veterans.
Oh yeah, that's right. You play the Army veteran, and David plays the Navy veteran, and it is done without dialogue. But because you guys are both skilled actors, I dare anyone to watch that film and not be moved.
Now I got a surprise for you. David used to play my lieutenant on my show, Tenafly. Yeah, so a little trivia.
Well,
yeah.
it goes back to how some things come full circle.
Yeah, yeah. I had no idea that film was going to be. I mean, I remember when that film got up to 3 million hits, and my God, I was ready to fall out. I can't believe. And the mail was just, you know, the emails was just. I still get the letters on it, you know.
Now.
Email letters is what I'm talking about.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it continues to touch people every day. And as I understand, it was as a result of doing Reveille that you began to put together your one-man show Above the Call.
Yeah, because of, I wanted to know, what did I do? I did another short version of that, and then I went off into the play because I really wanted to explore. Some of the mail that you received,
mm-hmm.
you really wanted to explore what the people just don't know what goes on in a soldier's mind. And one of the things is what I do. What I thought was so important about the call, the play, is the fact that most people live. They have this carryover, this residual effect of being on the front line and having taken a life, killing somebody. And this is a thing that bothers a lot of soldiers. You know, the fact is that I killed someone. You're nearing the end of your life.
Mm-hmm.
What is God going to say because you took a life? You say, well, you were defending your country. Well, wait a minute. Wasn't that guy defending his country? You know?
Yeah.
So I try to put that in perspective.
Yeah, and look, we talked about some of the philosophical issues that you raised, and tell me a tale. That, what you just raised, that's a subject we could easily spend an hour on.
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
We're talking to James McKeachin, star of Tenafly, Matlock, The Alpha Caper, First Monday, and other film and TV productions. This conversation with James originally aired in February 2013. James McKeachin passed away Saturday, January 11, 2025, at the age of 94. We'll shift gears and ask James a few questions about his career in television when we come back after this quick time out here on TV Confidential.
Buying or selling a home can be one of the most stressful things we'll ever do in life, but it doesn't have to be. And no one knows better than our friends at Front Porch Realty. Their community of realtors serving the Northern Bay Area of California that cares about their clients as individuals first and foremost. Whether you're a first-time buyer or looking to lease or sell your property in the Bay Area, Front Porch Realty will help you through this important transition by providing you with the right information for your situation while lessening the pain. They also work with a network of realtors throughout California who provide the same high caliber of customer service. Call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 for a realtor referral near you. You can also visit their website, frontporchrealtygroup.com, for more information on the services they provide, including upcoming workshops and seminars. For more information, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com. Front Porch Realty. They'll find the solution that works best for you.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it.
800-365-4216. 800-365-4216. 800-365-4216. That's 800-365-4216.
One more item. If you're starting a company, particularly one that is in an emerging market, you know that averting any sort of legal dispute is crucial to your business plan. Our friends at Tectonic Law offer an array of services that can help you avoid and preempt future litigation while also developing and protecting your intellectual property and intangible assets. Tectonic Law serves the needs of a host of emerging industries throughout California and beyond, including industrial designers, beverage makers, artists, farmers, retail stores, health practitioners, wellness experts, cosmetics manufacturers, nonprofit organizations, innovators in sustainable practices, and libraries. Go to tectoniclaw.com to learn more about how Tectonic Law can help your business thrive. Tectoniclaw.com, rock solid representation for groundbreaking industries.
Do you owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes? Are you being audited or investigated? Has the IRS sent you a letter demanding payment? You may not owe what they claim. Make this free call to the Tax Doctor now. Let them negotiate with the IRS on your behalf.
800-239-0201. 800-239-0201. That's 800-239-0201.
Hi, this is Barbara Feldon, and you're listening to TV Confidential.
Harry, this is a pretty tough neighborhood. It's grown even tougher since you were down here.
And all I'm trying to do is just to help you out a little bit, you know what I mean?
Yeah, thanks, teaser. I'll take the bus.
Now, you see, that's just what I mean. A cat like you ain't got no business taking no bus, not when I got this big chain here. Come on, get in the car. Get in the car, Harry.
Ed Robertson, along with our guest, actor and author James McKeachin, star of Tenafly, First Monday, Matlock, The Perry Mason Mysteries, and other films and TV series. James is also the author of 6 novels, including Tell Me a Tale, a novel of the Old South that the Los Angeles Times described as charming, compelling, provocative, and a visual story. One can almost see it on the screen. James makes the story come to life even more in the audiobook version of Tell Me a Tale, which he narrates, and which is available through Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and wherever books are sold online. This conversation with James originally aired in February 2013. James McEachin passed away Saturday, January 11th, 2025, at the age of 94.
We mentioned David Huddleston, who you worked with on Antenna Fly back when you were under contract and Universal, and you appeared in just about every major cop show at Universal at the time.
Well, you know who started that? I mean, why I got lucky over there at Universal was because of one of the most unlikeliest of guys of all. It was because of Jack Webb.
Yeah, I was going to say, Jack Webb was very important to you, especially early in your acting career.
Oh, absolutely. Jack was a hell of a guy. Terrible guy to work for. God, he'd scare you to death. You know, particularly you're a young actor, you don't know the camera. Well, I certainly didn't know it. And not only did I not know the camera, I never knew half the lines 90% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Jack wanted you to deliver these lines in a very staccato fashion, you know, like you would say, Sergeant Friday, I know where the suspect is. And you start shooting, and you say, Sergeant Friday, I know where the suspect is. And Jack would say, who told you to drop those words like that? Keep it straight, keep it straight. Who told you where the suspect is? Keep it straight, keep it together. You know, and just about every line he would do that, you know, because he directed most of them.
Mm-hmm.
So he was really quite something to work with, but he was as loyal as daylight. He would, you know, one day I'd play, or one show I'd be a baseball coach. I remember the next time you turn around, I was a policeman or something.
Yeah.
He's a loyal guy.
Yeah, I mean, he was like Quinn Martin in the sense that once he knew what you could do, you pretty much had steady work on one show or another.
Oh, yeah, right. And then, because Jack had Emergency. You remember he turned up with that, and then with
mm-hmm.
Kevin Tye
mm-hmm.
and the Randy Mantoo,
mm-hmm.
and he had Julie London,
who,
Jack was glad to get Julie London off his hands.
Yes.
Because they were married.
Yes, yes. Then along this, you worked with Jim Garner a couple of times, you know, once on
Rock. I worked with him and Jim because several times. In fact, we ended up doing a series together. He and Joe Montaigne and Charlie Durning.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the
First Monday.
First Monday.
First Monday.
Yeah,
in fact, you probably don't remember this, James, but you shot part of the pilot up in San Francisco over at City Hall.
I remember that, yes.
Yeah, and you and I were introduced very briefly by our mutual friend, Charles Floyd Johnson.
Oh, I'm doggone. And we're still friends with Charlie Johnson.
Yeah, yeah. But it seems to me you and Jim have two things in common, besides the fact, I mean, you know, one, you're both Korean War veterans, and two, and this is the important one in terms of acting, you're both non-actor actors, meaning you're not a method actor, and yet there is a thought process when you play a character.
Well, and the difference is between us, he's rich and I'm poor. He's a good old soul, though.
Yeah.
He's Charles is terribly successful now, too.
Yes, in fact, he just produced a movie about a year ago.
Yeah, the Tuskegee Airmen.
Yes, yes, that I believe did pretty well at the box office, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Real quickly, you worked with David Janssen a couple of times.
My favorite. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that because
my favorite guy.
Yeah, and one of my favorite roles of yours is the first Harry O you did, because normally you play, you're talking about normally you play cops or you play good guys like a baseball coach or whatever. You played a badass in that show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we...
Teaser struck.
Yeah, we shot it down in San Diego.
Yeah.
The guy, I played a pimp.
Yes, you did. Yeah, and you had like a maroon, yes, exactly.
Or a Cadillac was as long as a truck.
Yeah, yeah. And you seem to have fun playing him.
Oh yeah, it was. And then, one of the scenes I remember, Jim and I went to a nightclub before he get shot at. And just, it was just fun.
Yeah.
David. David was a piece of work.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
great guy, fun guy. You know, he's a friend of Clint Eastwood's as well.
who is also a friend of yours. You worked, James, you've done so many things. Sometimes I forget what you've done. Like, for example, Play Misty for me is one of my favorite movies, but I forgot you did that.
Yeah, that's how Clint and I started our long-lasting relationship, and then we don't talk now. I agree, you were supposed to, but something happened. But yeah, he's all right. He's still working.
He's still working. And of course, you played a DJ in that, and I didn't realize that you would actually you worked in the music industry for a time.
Yeah. Well, Clint didn't believe it, but I told him. I said, "Hey, man, I was in the." He went away. He says, "Oh, you're going to get the part. Don't worry about it." You know who they wanted for that part, but he wasn't available or something happened. I can't remember. Flip Wilson. You remember? He was very hot at the time.
Yes, he was.
So, but I walked in there, and then Clint and I became instant friends. And we remained that way up until a few years ago. And, we'd go out every now and then. And ironic enough, not that I think he would be the best man for the role if I had lost Hal. I was going to go to Clint to play the part of Mr. Archie and Tell Me a Tale. Because he certainly, Clint certainly is old enough to do it.
Actor, novelist, and U.S. Army veteran James McEachin from a conversation that originally aired in February 2013 here on TV Confidential. James McEachin passed away Saturday, January 11th, 2025, at the age of 94.
Buying or selling a home can be one of the most stressful things we'll ever do in life, but it doesn't have to be. And no one knows better than our friends at Front Porch Realty. Their community of realtors serving the Northern Bay Area of California that cares about their clients as individuals first and foremost. Whether you're a first-time buyer or looking to lease or sell your property in the Bay Area, Front Porch Realty will help you through this important transition by providing you with the right information for your situation while lessening the pain. They also work with a network of realtors throughout California who provide the same high caliber of customer service. Call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 for a realtor referral near you. You can also visit their website, frontporchrealtygroup.com, for more information on the services they provide, including upcoming workshops and seminars. For more information, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com. Front Porch Realty. They'll find the solution that works best for you.
One more item. If you're starting a company, particularly one that is in an emerging market, you know that averting any sort of legal dispute is crucial to your business plan. Our friends at Tectonic Law offer an array of services that can help you avoid and preempt future litigation while also developing and protecting your intellectual property and intangible assets. Tectonic Law serves the needs of a host of emerging industries throughout California and beyond, including industrial designers, beverage makers, artists, farmers, retail stores, health practitioners, wellness experts, cosmetics manufacturers, nonprofit organizations, innovators in sustainable practices, and libraries. Go to tectoniclaw.com to learn more about how Tectonic Law can help your business thrive. Tectoniclaw.com, rock solid representation for groundbreaking industries. The next edition of TV Confidential will premiere next week on this station at the usual time. We'll play part two of our conversation with Harrison Page, plus we'll welcome Ann Serling and Jody Serling, the daughters of Rod Serling. In the meantime, a reminder that Russ Meyer's Vixen is now available on Blu-ray through Severin Films, severinfilms.com, as well as amazon.com, wherever Blu-rays are sold. While both Russ Meyer's Up and Russ Meyer's Motorcycle are available for pre-order right now at severinfilms.com. For more on Harrison Page, HarrisonPage.com. You can also follow Harrison.
Do you have something you'd like to get painted? Then bring it to Victory Powder Coating. Powder coating is a durable, colorful, environmentally friendly alternative to paint. It's useful in automotive, agricultural, decorative, and high-temperature applications. Victory Powder Coating has become the North State leader in powder coating applications and metal finishing. They specialize in large industrial items like truck beds, agricultural equipment, and trailers. They're dedicated to providing superior work and outstanding customer care. Consider Victory Powder Coating for your next project. Victory Powder Coating.
When people ask me for a recommendation for a heating or air conditioning company, I always say Alliance Heating and Air. Why? Well, they've been taking care of our HVAC system for 14 years. Professional, friendly, and willing to go to the extra step for their customers. I have found no problem too difficult or too minor for them to repair. I recommend Alliance Heating and Air with no reservations. You can reach them at 530-221-2642 or online at homecomfort.org. And they have 24/7 emergency assistance. Alliance Heating and Air.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.